Welcome to For the Record, a brand new podcast that dives deeper in today's media digest. This podcast is in collaboration with WHUS Radio, The Daily Campus, and UCTV. Following a biweekly basis, representatives from each of these respective media organizations will sit in a recording studio and discuss relevant news stories that their organization has reported on, as well as state and global news. A quick disclaimer before we get into this week's episode. The views and opinions expressed on this show are those of the hosts and guests and are not necessarily the views of the staff, management, or license of WHUS Radio, The Daily Campus, UCTV, or of the University of Connecticut. And we're back for week two. I'm Katie.
I'm Pierce.
I'm Holden.
And I'm Jenna.
And Jenna's finally here with us in studio.
Yay!
That was so delayed.
They weren't actually happy about it. They just realized they should cheer.
Yeah. Well, anyway, we have a lot of fun news topics to dive into this week. So, who wants to go first?
Katie, I mean, you're the moderator. Do you want to get us started off?
Sure. I guess we'll start with Jimmy Kimmel. We'll go right into global because I feel like this has been a big media topic, and I would love to hear everyone's viewpoints on it, considering that we all tackle slightly different areas of media. So, Jimmy Kimmel getting suspended. How do we feel about that whole situation?
It was crazy to me how fast the entire thing happened. It seemed like he said something, what he said didn't go viral, but he was immediately suspended. That went viral, and then days later, he was back on the air. And it felt so fast, but it really has been dominating the news cycle, and even smaller elements have been dominating the news cycle as well. And his viewership went way up, you can't deny, after he got canceled. That last monologue was probably one of his most viewed shows.
Yeah, and then the monologue when he returned was also, I saw the views of that go crazy high, especially on YouTube, because that's how I ended up watching it, because it's not streamed here.
Well, yeah, like, still fun fact, that monologue was not on television in, what, you said,
20% of the
country?
20% of the normal markets, yep.
Yeah, and a lot of those were cities.
Right. Big cities. Pierce, your thoughts?
I mean, I also just think, I think it was on that his same, like, new monologue where he had Stephen Colbert come on after Colbert's show was also, like, suspended for what seemed like kind of similar reasons for, you know, obviously Jimmy Kimmel was for talking about the Charlie Kirk situation versus Colbert just seemed to be more of critical of the administration, of the Trump administration at times. But I think, like, you know, the Jimmy Kimmel thing is crazy, but it's not even necessarily the first time that this has been happening in America in the past few months.
Yeah, there's been a lot of conversations through other media professionals and also just viewers online talking about the First Amendment and how this impacts the First Amendment and kind of shows the relationship between the administration and the media and what we've been seeing the past few months going into the second term of Trump's administration. There's been a lot of statements and claims made about how this could violate free speech and freedom of the press, and it's just, it's wow. It's wow.
Yeah, I just mean, it's not even, like, just Jimmy Kimmel or, like, anyone before that. It's also the fact that you have our president going on Truth Social saying that there's more to this, like, there's more targets, saying that he wants to go after Jimmy Fallon and
Seth
Meyers next as well. Like, you shouldn't have a president targeting TV personalities.
Yeah.
It definitely seems almost a little below his pay grade to be worrying about what comedians are saying.
Right.
But another thing that really stuck out to me was that I feel like so much of politics today is either hard right or hard left. Like, there's not so much middle ground. But we saw conservative politicians coming out and saying that this was government overreach and that even if they didn't agree with Kimmel, he shouldn't be canceled or taken off television. I think Ted Cruz was one of the really big names that said, hey, if the government can do this, it can be turned around on conservatives, too. So I thought that was kind of, maybe not shocking, but just something that you don't see as much these days, that, like, there are conservative politicians speaking out against something that the Trump administration supports.
Yeah, I'd also say that just in recent years, there hasn't been a lot of that, like, common ground between both major political parties. So it was really refreshing, almost, to see that Ted Cruz stepped up and was like, hey, like, this is not okay. This should not be happening. in this day and age with all of our with the media and our relationship with the current administration. So I found it to be very refreshing. It definitely took people by surprise.
I think it was also interesting how, like, immediately following his suspension, there was a pretty successful boycott of Disney, where Disney, I think, lost, it was like $3.6 billion or something close to that, from people canceling their Disney Plus subscriptions and stuff like that. Which was, you know, I think the phrase boycott is thrown around a lot. But that was, you know, $3.6 billion of revenue is a significant amount. And, you know, probably played a part in them reinstating Jimmy Kimmel's show, which I think is very interesting.
Mm-hmm. I also wanted to talk about, with Jimmy Kimmel bringing light during his monologue coming back, on the Pentagon situation, I believe he said it was, where they were saying that you had to... You had to sign an oath or something, saying that you were not gonna reveal, like, any information, even if it was, like, declassified, until they were allowing you to. And that's especially bad, because then you also had, like, last year with, last semester with the, I believe it was it the Associated Press that got kicked out? Gulf situation.
Yeah, with the Gulf of America.
America versus, yeah.
Yeah.
And
they were suspended from the White
House.
They wouldn't let them in.
They were suspended, and obviously that is a privilege to be put into the White House, but we talked a lot about with the First Amendment that you can't be kicked out specifically because of your views. You can only be kicked out because of, like, say, like, you're not actually, like, reporting that much or whatever, like, just whatever sort of, like, quality issues. So the idea that you have people that are supposed to be in these buildings, like, in order to, like, have this transparency, and then you're getting told very specifically, like, you can be as transparent as we want you to be.
Yeah.
It's like borderline
censorship. Almost.
No, it really is, especially, again, with even just bringing this back to, like, the Jimmy Kimmel situation, you know, trying to get people who say certain things off the air. Like, it just... not a good look for the First Amendment.
Yeah.
If I can bring our perspective as journalism students into that, I mean, they're essentially saying you can't write something about the Pentagon that's not from an official press release. If we wrote stories that were just based on press releases, our professors would be, like, having talks with us about how that's not what reporters do.
Right.
I think the point of reporters is that they can go beyond press releases. Press releases are their own entity, and they inform the people what the government, you know, wants to tell the people, and reporters can kind of go deeper than that. I think that's kind of the point of having journalists. So it is definitely a big week for the First Amendment with all that going on.
I agree. I mean, to kind of take a bit of a tangent from the Jimmy Kimmel conversation, we mentioned how his suspension was due to Charlie Kirk and everything that transpired from that. And I remember last week we talked a bit about that situation, as it was so new and prevalent in media. So I thought we'd follow up a little bit and discuss what it's looking like now in the media. Is it still at that forefront like we thought it might be?
I mean, I feel like it's still definitely, like, I'm not sure if it's at the forefront. It's not the thing that is the number one thing that's being talked about, but it's definitely still there. Like, 2 weeks out, I feel like it's still something that gets brought up. I mean, with the Jimmy Kimmel thing happening, I feel like you kind of, even with the Jimmy Kimmel thing happening, the Jimmy Kimmel thing is happening because the Charlie Kirk thing happened. It's kind of a little bit just kind of there now. It's not really possible for it to disappear.
It feels like the discourse about Charlie Kirk's killing has kind of taken on a life of its own beyond just the news of the assassination. It feels like it's kind of sparking all these offshoots into, like we were talking about, free speech. If we want to get into the memorial that happened for Charlie Kirk,
in
there
Arizona,
was a lot
right?
said during that. Yeah, and I mean, Trump was at the memorial, of course, and had a speech that I'm sure a lot of us have seen parts of on social media. So it feels like, I mean, I wouldn't say the actual shooting is in the news cycle as much, but it sparked all of these little news stories, or not little news stories, it sparked all of these news stories with lives of their own now.
Yeah. I think the memorial service that was at that stadium in Arizona alone is something we should talk about quick.
Yes.
Because that was a whole big, it was like live streamed everywhere. There was so much happening. They sold out an entire like football stadium mm-hmm. for that. So what are your thoughts, Holden and Pierce? You guys are over there. I feel like Jen and I have done a little bit of the discussion already.
Well, I mean, the first thing that comes to mind with me for this entire issue with Charlie Kirk is that I think that this is important. Also, going back to even just Jimmy Kimmel too, is that I don't really feel like any sort of personality should be upholded to this sort of standard. You know, like with a memorial that big. I'm not saying, like, he didn't touch a lot of people, he wasn't important to a lot of people, but, like, to make it such a country issue that's, like, dividing people so much, I just think is a little wild for someone that actually was not, like, in power of the country, you know, not, like, any sort of elected official or anything, not, like, I think that it's one thing to, like, be a speaker, it's another thing to be a representative of the people. And so I think that how much this has divided people has been just a little wild, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Especially because I was talking about outside with the Jimmy Kimmel situation, how people had a lot of opinions on Charlie Kirk's situation with how that came out of his speech, because Jimmy Kimmel's also came out of his speech. And so then you wind up with a situation where we have like an administration that's like, deciding who gets the free speech and also really upholding this situation like high and honestly kind of like using it too, which kind of sucks.
My other thing with the memorial is, you know, before Charlie Kirk died a few months ago, we had a Minnesota
Melissa Hortman
who her and her husband were both assassinated. Two other a politician and his wife were also attacked. And you know, they don't get a memorial like this. You know, Trump had all flags flown at half mast for Charlie Kirk, and they didn't get this. And you know, there is the aspect of the fact that Charlie Kirk was a much more public figure, but I feel like, you know, the level of publicity that somebody had shouldn't affect, especially stuff like, you know, smaller things like flying a flag half-mast, but that is an important thing when there's a clear double standard of who the country and the Trump administration is deciding who they're honoring when we're in such a kind of politically divisive time as we are in now.
I'd also like to kind of build off of that. It's almost setting, like, a precedent, considering that elected officials weren't recognized in the same way as more of just a known figure, which I also found to be very interesting.
Well, just really quickly adding on to all that. Trump was also asked about flying the flags half-mast for her in retrospect. And he asked to be reminded about that whole incident. And so it just kind of sucks, as we said, that's a politician.
I have my typical story topic list prepared before we start recording. But there's one I just thought of as we were talking just now. Tylenol that has come up.
Well, it's also, I think, telling of a... It's gotten to a point where Trump says a lot of things. But this thing of saying that acetaminophen and Tylenol can, if you pregnant women take it, can cause autism in their children, was kind of, I feel like, largely kind of rejected outright by most people. Like, it's just, like, kind of crazy.
I mean, there's the cohort that thinks vaccines cause autism. No
right.
evidence to back that up. And it's just such a odd switch to me to go from saying vaccines cause autism, vaccines this thing that maybe some people do find esoteric in some regard, like maybe they don't understand completely how vaccines work, and shifting that to say that it's Tylenol, that's something that I think everyone, maybe I'm speaking for myself, I've taken Tylenol plenty of times. I think it's something that's just so much more in our everyday lives. To switch to say that causes autism was just kind of a shock to the system almost, even for people who are maybe within the belief that autism is caused by some, like, medicinal factor.
I was really having a field day when that clip came out from that interview that he had, because a lot of people through TikTok specifically were making some really funny content. I found it to be really engaging in, you know, a very fun way, kind of making fun of the conversation. One I'll mention is somebody made a video, and it said, "Why are you guys still calling it autism? It's actually acetaminophen American now." that one personally caught my eye. That was just kind of like, wow, that's really funny. But
yeah.
Yes, it's...
Also, maybe we should just put it on the record. I think the confusion came from the fact that there are studies that show a positive correlation between taking Tylenol during pregnancy and autism. But the main idea behind those studies is not that the ingredients in Tylenol cause autism. It's that if you are having other problems during your pregnancy that could be more directly related to autism, you might be having more fevers during that pregnancy, and that's why you're taking Tylenol. So that is a correlation, not causation relationship.
Yeah, that was a great way to put it.
Yeah.
And I'd also say that, like the company Tylenol themselves, like, came out on all of their social platforms to state that they, that... The drug does not cause autism. Autism is something that is, I believe it's genetic, hereditary, it's something.
Everything, I will say, from what I've seen from scientific sources, everything we know about autism starts in the womb. I'm sure people have heard that if they're looking at scientific papers.
Right.
So there is a genetic component.
Well, I mean, it is also really scary to think about the fact that, like, we can sit here and, like, joke about this, but there are, like, there are people that are going to listen to this. It's just, like, gets to a point of, like, how much modern medicine can we, like, throw away off of random,
comments.
And if you are pregnant, to be clear, a fever is going to be a lot more harmful than Tylenol. You should not let a fever sit while you're pregnant.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, I think maybe we can transition a bit more to local UConn-centered news. I think we've kind of touched on most of our global news that we kind of wanted to hit today. So we had a few different points. I didn't know if anyone wanted to talk about one first.
I can jump into... I went to the Board of Trustees meeting that was held, I believe it was on the 17th of September. And one thing that really stood out to me during this meeting was President Radenka Marik, UConn's president, went and gave her president's report. And in it, she talked about how a lot of federal funding for research is being stopped or being, you know, the amount that's being funded is being cut. And one of the things that she said as a kind of solution or a way to get more and get more federal funding was to put our research priorities in line with that of the federal government. And two of the ones that she said were priorities were national security and artificial intelligence, which I think is very interesting, especially since, you know, I think artificial intelligence especially is a big topic nowadays that's very controversial. In different areas.
And if I can just preface this, because I know we're going to have a conversation about this, but if I can preface it just by saying this is definitely something that we as news organizations are going to go on and try to get a little more concrete research and interviews and specific reporting on coming out in the future as well.
Yeah, I would 100% agree. I know that this was a big piece of information that we learned this past week, so I definitely think that all of our organizations are going to be diving into this.
So everybody make sure to read the Daily Campus and listen to us and watch UCTV for more information.
There were some other interesting topics also discussed at this Board of Trustees meeting. One thing I wanted to bring up as a bit of a pivot point, there was a big discussion about Avery Point, the regional UConn campus, and its lack of housing. First off, did anybody know that there's housing at Waterbury? Because I didn't.
I only knew because I went to this Board of Trustees meeting and they mentioned the fact that Avery Point was the only campus without any housing.
Right, and I didn't even know that. I thought Avery Point and Waterbury were the only two that didn't have housing, but apparently Waterbury does. So I learned something new. Mm-hmm. But in the minutes of this Board of Trustees meeting, there was a lot of discussion over Avery Point and the housing. What I've learned is that there was a motion to approve a strategic plan, and the plan was approved, and they're, you know, in the process of creating a development for students to live in. However, it was also tabled. So it's been approved, and they're going to create a strategic plan. However, the plan for the housing part of it has been tabled, and they have not started construction yet. So, like, what's up with that?
It did seem like to me, because it was interesting, because at that same Board of Trustees meeting, D'Alva, our provost, who will...
Former provost.
Technically, I think still...
Soon to be former
provost.
There you go.
She gave a whole presentation on the growth of the regional campuses, in which she emphasized how UConn is trying to move away from the idea that Storrs is the UConn campus, and the other ones, the phrase she used was essentially feeder schools to UConn, where you would do 2 years at one of the regional campuses and then go to Storrs. They're trying to build up these other campuses so that there are students who go to Stanford or Hartford or Avery Point or Waterbury as to go and do their 4 years there.
Mm-hmm.
And the two biggest things that need to happen in order for them to achieve that goal is to add more housing and to add more majors.
Yes.
Because the thing they talked about at Avery Point was, of course, the fact that it's the only campus without housing, but it also, there's only four-year majors that are available at Avery Point.
Yeah.
So, you know, you could go to Avery Point for 4 years, but you have such a limited option of curriculum that you can pursue.
Mm-hmm.
It's, I think it's English, general studies, and then two marine science majors. So it does seem like this hopefully is a priority for them. But it's just kind of, I think they're really in the process of developing the plan of how to do that.
Mm-hmm. I know that there's been a lot of state senators that have spoken out about this. Senator Kathy Osten was one that spoke at this Board of Trustees meeting, as well as the Groton representative, Heather Summers. And they've been working a lot together on that.
Heather Summers, I believe, is also a state senator.
Yeah, I believe she is, I think.
Yeah.
I'll have to check that, but yeah. The two state senators, because their districts do overlap, because it's district, I believe it's district 18 and 19, or it's 19 and 20. I don't remember. But I know that the two of them work very well together, and they do work together considering the proximity in which their districts lay. And I know that they have been two very strong advocates for the growth of the Avery Point campus.
Mm-hmm.
If we're talking about housing...
Housing.
There is... there was a man. I didn't go to this committee meeting. I'm just pivoting. I'm pivoting into the topic.
Okay, I can touch on this a little bit. So, similar to this Board of Trustees meeting, there was a Mansfield Town Council meeting all within the past like week and a half that have been very widely discussed about. So, at this recent Mansfield Town Council meeting, there was a big discussion on the UConn housing situation. The Vice President for Student Enrollment and Life, I believe his title is Nathan First, and he was there to speak on the growth of UConn housing and the new housing building, or the new housing developments that are in the works or have been fully constructed, specifically for UConn students. So one thing that was really interesting about this meeting is the Deputy Mayor, Ben Shaken, kind of had a little bit of a back and forth with First about how the standard, the new housing development, has been kind of taken over by UConn and UConn undergraduate students, as Shaken said that he believed it was for residents and for undergraduate students, and that it would be kind of a more even split between who lives there. And another council member, Brian Coleman, also kind of touched on the traffic, and that we can dive into right after, about how, you know, gridlocked it's been in the UConn Stores area with all of the parking and the construction and there being no parking. So yeah, it was an interesting conversation to listen to.
I hit traffic just driving here today. Just a little personal note about me.
So off-campus life.
So just to be, it's there. Or just personal experience.
I think it's also interesting, because this reminds me also of a thing that was happening at the Stanford campus with, there was a building called, I believe it was called the Boulevard, was the name of the building, which the UConn was trying to buy out to transform it into student housing at Stanford, and the residents of that building formed a tenant union to protest the fact that they didn't want to be kicked out of their house, their apartments. And it is kind of, you know, UConn is, you know, continuing to grow, enrollments increased this year, you know, decent chance it will increase next year, and they need space. But the more they expand, the more pushback they're getting, because they're expanding into where people live.
Yeah, they're expanding into more residential communities, which, yeah, I mean, we do need the residential accommodations, but I think the way in which it's being done, you're not giving the tenants that currently live in these locations any notice, which is something that I've noticed. But also to kind of piggyback off of your comment about housing and development, there was another thing mentioned in this council meeting about the Mark Mansfield, which is a new development, being built on North Eaglesville Road. And it is set to have just under 800 beds in it, specifically for students, that should be finalized in construction by the fall of 2027. But if there is any delays in that, they're going to have to lower the enrollment for the university come fall of next year, which is kind of crazy to say.
Yeah. But I know since I've been here personally, every single year it's been more and more enrollment. And I know some of that is from a lot of publicity we've been getting with the basketball team and national championships. But it seems like it just keeps growing and growing. Mm. And every year it feels like the housing and housing problems are more of a pattern than an event. Like, I know I've personally seen it every year that I've been here.
And also with the issues with housing, there's also issues that now lie with parking. And we can kind of transition to that. Also at this council meeting, Brian Coleman made a comment how he believes that anyone that is not accredited junior or higher should have their car on campus to help offset this traffic that we're experiencing due to all this construction, and to not give exceptions. From what I understood, he doesn't want to give exceptions to freshmen and sophomores. It's only those with the set amount of credits, which is 54, are able to have cars because of the parking situation, which it's an interesting comment to make.
Not to get anecdotal, but my roommate, right, I have two housemates, and one of them is a sophomore. They didn't get housing because of the recent housing crisis. So you can't really have it down to just credits. At least, maybe you could with residential parking, but with commuter parking, you 100% can't do that because, like, they didn't give housing to some sophomores. Mm-hmm. Or even if they did, I don't know. I just feel like the parking situation, I actually don't think it comes down to how many people is off campus. I think it's that they have these housing issues. Mm-hmm. You mentioned how it keeps going up every year, but in the time I've been here, they've only built one housing complex, I believe, right? It's just CT Hall.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure how many parking lots they've built, if any.
Not only that, the people who aren't given housing as, like, sophomores that are returning for their second year, they are having trouble parking because now there's more residential students on campus living who are eligible to have cars, and they're filling up commuter parking lots because now the restrictions on what areas you can park in have also changed. So it's been very difficult for these off-campus students to even find parking spaces because they have not been given housing on campus. So now they're resorting to outside alternatives but still can't park without paying ridiculous parking permit fees. The way in which the information about the parking restrictions for Brian Coleman, like that comment made, I don't know if he meant, like, specifically just those with the amount of credits, or if it applies to, like, sophomores who are, you know, traveling from off campus to parking in commuters. It wasn't really clarified. So I would like to preface that, but still quite a comment to make considering the many crises we have on this campus.
Mm-hmm. I would argue that the traffic currently, other than, yeah, there is a lot of problems with parking spots. I would say that the traffic currently is probably coming from the fact that there is construction on almost every street.
Yeah, right.
That has been really bad. Mm-hmm. And also, especially because just the way that UConn is set up, too, the streets are not really that well made for traffic. Because, for example, if you want to go past downtown, you mm-hmm. have the one street that has, literally, I would say, probably 10 crosswalks in it.
And there's, at least and four lights.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I think that the issue is probably more just the fact that it is a college campus and it doesn't have enough, back roads around it.
Mm-hmm. I agree. We're very much our own kind of entity here. Yeah. Storrs is kind of its own thing. It's its own, town within the town of Mansfield. So it doesn't really allow itself to be very flexible to traffic. I feel like this episode we've kind of started globally and continued to localize. So we're going to continue to localize even further. The referendum from USG, another big conversation starter this week. Who wants to take a stab at this one?
I can tell you right now, I have been following this since last semester, the spring semester, mm-hmm. when it started.
Right.
I know a couple of us here have been, but it's kind of been contentious the whole way through. There's been talks of biased language in the referendum. People have said that it's not biased language. They tried to make a committee to refine the language, and the committee was dissolved because it didn't end up getting anywhere. It's definitely been a bit of a drama with the referendum story.
Mm-hmm.
So the fact that it was finally voted on and that they voted not to release it to the student body, it was definitely a dramatic conclusion, and I don't think it's going to be the last we're seeing of a referendum like this.
Right. Also, a piece of information that I'm aware of, I had the opportunity to meet with the USG president and comptroller, Andy Zhang, and Billy Lipinski this past week on Husky Nation News, and we talked a bit about the referendum outside of the show. And what I was informed of is the author of the original referendum has since graduated. So mm-hmm. to continue to discuss a piece of legislation when the individual who wrote it up and, authorized it is difficult because you can't directly contact them.
Mm-hmm.
It makes things a little more difficult. So essentially what I was informed of is that all of the external routes to continue to work on this referendum and change the language and the committee has essentially been exhausted. And until there is any additional changes made or the language has changed, it cannot return to the Senate to be voted on until, any sort of change to the official document has been made. So that's an update for you guys on what I've been informed of recently mm-hmm. and kind of in terms of what is next for this referendum.
Yeah, and if I can also just provide a little context, I feel like a lot of talk about this referendum is very, unspecified about what it actually is. The referendum itself, if it was voted yes, all that would mean is that a survey is released to the mm-hmm. student body where they could vote on their thoughts about UConn divesting from, weapons manufacturers, and I think there were some other notes in there that mm-hmm. the survey would refer to. But the idea behind all this debate was that the language in the survey and in the information about the survey was biased. So the referendum itself was not something that would directly affect UConn administration. It would have been something released to the students.
Mm-hmm. You've been our context queen. You've been on top of it. I really appreciate it. But yeah, the referendum, essentially, as Jenna said, is just three questions that would be sent out to the student body for opinion. So that's it.
One thing that I heard from the element of the concerns of bias from some USG senators was there was an organization here called Praxis that was before my time here.
Yes.
But Praxis, what I've heard about Praxis was Praxis ended up getting its funding cut from the university because Praxis took too hard of a stance on, I forget the topic, I think it was around the time of the BLM movement and George Floyd. They took a stance on that, And because students are paying fees to, you know, if money comes directly from their fee bill to these tier three organizations, these organizations aren't allowed to take necessarily stances like that, depending on how firm the stance is. And I think there was some concerns from, you know, USG senators of if they do pass this and it is deemed to be something that is too biased, that that could actually affect USG's standing as a tier three organization. And so I think that aspect of it is honestly a valid concern from USG senators. But I think, you know, a big thing that I think one of the a senator who spoke at the meeting where they voted on the referendum said is they want to take it back and they want to bring it back to the kind of drawing room and try to change the referendum to remove some of the language that could be considered biased, and so they can release it and hopefully, you know, re-vote on it and release it to the student body. I mean, this has been going on since, as Jenna said, the last spring semester, and I doubt that this will be the last time that we hear about the referendum. I think this is something that is probably going to come back up, maybe not necessarily very soon, but definitely, you know, if not within this semester or the next semester, definitely in the future for USG and the University of Connecticut.
Yeah, I agree.
Well, that's it.
See ya. Maybe I'll take this one.
As the moderator.
I think we had a really great discussion this week. I'm really happy with all of our touch points. I know that we had a lot we wanted to pack into this episode, and I feel like we did a really good doing that. And, you know, localizing to localize, really fun. Complete opposite of the structure from last week, but we're keeping people on their toes.
Yes.
So I love it, changing it up every week. So, yeah, I wanted to thank everyone for not only coming in and, you know, doing another week, another episode, but also to everyone listening. Shout out to you guys. We love and appreciate you all and listening to us talk for however long this episode will be. All right, we will see you all in 2 weeks. Thank you so much for listening. Bye.
Bye.
See you guys.
Bye.